I'm Haley Williams of the Buffalo Buttes, and you're listening to The Experience Hockey Talk.
And everyone, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for the serious hockey fan. My name is Michael Mom, and we are brought to you by the Tilda Kilt Frederick. The Tilda Kilt Pub and Eatery, located at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Come to the Celtic-themed sports pub featuring the world-famous Tilted Kilt Girls. For more information on the Tilda Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today. And today, December 12, 2015, we are looking back at the week that was the NHL, the Washington Capitals, and the NWHL. And first, we're going to start with December 5th, the Washington Capitals at the Winnipeg Jets. The lineup was first line, Alex Ovechkin with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie. Second line, Andrei Burakovsky with Evgeny Kuznetsov, Justin Williams. Third line, Jason Schmerow with Jay Beagle and Tom Wilson. And the fourth line with Brooks Like, Michael Latta, and Stanislav Galiv. And the defensive pairings featured Nate Schmidt with John Carlson, Carl Alsner with Matt Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov with Taylor Chorney, and Braden Holtby starting in net. In the first period, it was a very penalty-filled first period with one goal. First off, at 7:16, Taylor Chorney was called for interference. Then at 12:33, Stanislav Galiv was called for hooking. Then at 13:57, Jason Schmerow was called for tripping. Then at 16:39, Alexander Burmistrov was called for delay of game. And at 18:57, you had multiple penalties, with Tom Wilson beginning a double minor for roughing, Mark Stewart for roughing, Jacob Trouba for fighting, which was a 5-minute major, and Michael Latta also 5-minute major for fighting. Then at 19:53 on the power play, Andrew Ladd scored his 8th goal of the season from Brian Little, his 12th of the season, and Dustin Byfuglien, his 10th assist of the season. Which, going into the first intermission, Winnipeg was up 1-0 over the Caps. They outshot the Capitals 17-6. Faceoffs were 9-8 in favor of Washington. Hits were even at 10 apiece, and the Capitals were 0-1 on the power play, whereas Winnipeg was 1-4. Then, going into the second period, Chris Thorburn was called for tripping at 1:41. Then Evgeny Kuznetsov was called for hooking at 7:58. Anthony Peluso was then called for roughing at 14:13, which then led into a power play goal at 14:25 from Nicholas Backstrom with his 9th of the season, from John Carlson with his 15th assist of the season, and Andrei Burakovsky with his 5th assist of the season. Then at 15:16, Chris Thorburn was called for roughing. Washington had tied the game going into the second intermission at 1 apiece. Shots were 25-20 in favor of Winnipeg. Faceoffs were 21-20 in favor of the Washington Capitals. Hits were 16 apiece, and the power play was 1-4 for Washington and 1-5 for Winnipeg. In the third period, there is nothing of note. So going into overtime, it was tied 1-1. Shots were 34-32 in favor of Winnipeg. Faceoffs were 31-28 in favor of Washington. Hits were 25-23 in favor of Washington, and the power play was 1-4 for the Caps and 1-5 for the Jets. And then in OT, Mark Scheifele scored his 10th of the season at 4:40 from Jacob Trouba with his 5th assist of the season, and Blake Wheeler with his 18th assist of the season. There was some skepticism on this goal, whether it was offsides or not. I unfortunately only saw replays. It didn't look offsides to me personally. I don't know. I wasn't watching the game at the time as it was happening. I was unfortunately out of town when this game happened, so that's why you're getting no analysis on each period or after the game. But at the end of the game, it was Winnipeg 2, Washington 1. Shots were 38-36 Washington. Faceoffs were 32-31 Washington. Hits were 26-23 Washington. And on the power play, it was still 1-4 for the Caps and 1-5 for the Jets. Then, going on to December 8th, the Detroit Red Wings versus the Washington Capitals. Lineup was Alex Ovechkin with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie, Marcus Johansson with Kenny Kuznetsov and Justin Williams, Jason Chimera with Jay Beagle and Tom Wilson, Brooks Lake with Michael Latta and Andrei Burakovsky. Defense pairings were Nate Schmidt with John Carlson, Carl Alzner with Matt Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov with Taylor Chorney, and Braden Holtby as your starter in net. In the first period, it got off to a quick start with 43 seconds into the game. Justin Williams scored his 8th goal of the season from Evgeny Kuznetsov with his 19th assist of the season and Marcus Johansson his 9th of the season. Then, Nicholas Cronwall was called for slashing at 9:30, but then at 15:40, Henrik Zetterberg scored his 5th of the season from Dylan Larkin with his 11th assist of the season. Then Washington and Detroit were tied at 1 apiece going into the first intermission. Shots were 11-8 Washington. Faceoffs were 10-8 Washington. Hits were 8-7 Detroit. And the Capitals had the only power play of the period going 0-1. Analysis, it was a good start for the Caps. Really great opening shift for the Caps as it got them on the board less than a minute into the game. However, a minor breakdown in their own zone costed them as they entered the first intermission tied at 1 apiece. Then, in the second period, Tomas Yurko scored his first goal of the season from Joakim Andersson and Luke Glendening at 3:16 into the second. Detroit then got a penalty with Jonathan Erickson was called for tripping at 14:46. Detroit was up 2-1 going into the second intermission. Shots were 28-15 Washington. Faceoffs were 22-14 Washington. And hits were 19-13 Washington. And the Caps were 0-2 on the power play. And Detroit had yet to have one. Then, going into the third period, analysis for the second period. The Caps outshot the Red Wings 17-7 in the second period, but it didn't amount to much as Detroit scored the only goal and go into the second intermission with the lead. Caps need to get back to playing their game as they were, yes, outshooting them, but they weren't really playing their game. Going into the third period, Mike Green was called for holding at 6:29 into the third, then at 10:23, Brandon Smith was called for hooking, which then led to the power play goal by Alexander Ovechkin, his 13th of the season, for Marcus Johansson, his 10th assist of the season, and Nicholas Backstrom, his 14th assist of the season, and that was scored at 10:51. Going into overtime, it was tied 2-2, Washington outshot Detroit 39-21. Had 29 faceoff wins to Detroit's 24, outhit Detroit 28-20, and had one goal on 4 power play opportunities for the Caps, where Detroit had none. Then, going into overtime, Alex Ovechkin was called for hooking at 2:35, and then Gustav Nyquist was called for slashing at 4:41. Going into the shootout, Detroit had Gustav Nyquist and Pavel Datsyuk both shoot and miss, whereas Washington, in the first two rounds, had TJ Oshie and Evgeny Kuznetsov both score to win the game for the Washington Capitals 3-2, with the Caps outshooting Detroit 40-23, winning 32 faceoffs to Detroit's 26, outhit the Red Wings 28-20. Red Wings were 0-1 on the power play, and the Capitals were 1-5. This was a solid game that saw the Caps dominate in almost every category. Big thing is the Caps need to get their power play clicking. Going 1-5 is not acceptable. Also, I'm happy to see Tom Wilson is now getting third line minutes, but let's keep him there and let him grow his game. That is a key critical thing. You want your younger guys to grow into their game and become better players, and then eventually not be playing fourth third line minutes, but first and second line minutes instead. And with that, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll be doing the NWHL report. Looking for hockey cards to build your collection, or that specific card you would like to have to get signed by your favorite player? Then I recommend Just Hockey Cards out in Silver Spring, Maryland. Donald takes good care of me when I'm looking to build my collection, and he'll help you too. For inquiries, reach out to Donald at blake4av@aol.com. That's blake4av@aol.com. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey fans, and it is now time to do the NWHL report, which is brought to you by AwesomeCon. AwesomeCon, which is June 3rd through 5th, 2016 at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. Come see special guests like Adam West, Burt Ward, Marina Baccarin, and many others. For more information, please visit awesome-con.com. And going into this past weekend's games, on Saturday, December 5th, the Buffalo Buttes went and played the Boston Pride in Boston after a 3-game losing streak, which saw them struggle to score. The Pride exploded for 5 first-period goals, including 2 from Jillian Dempsey en route to a 7-6 victory over the Buttes. Hillary Knight, Jordan Smelker, Emily Field, Rachel Lanes, and Amanda Pelkey also lit the lamp for Boston. Devin Skeets continued her hot streak, scoring Buffalo's first hat trick in franchise history. In the Pride 7-6 win over the Buttes, it saw Boston outshoot Buffalo 50-21. Then the next day, Sunday, December 6, you had the Buffalo Buttes versus the Connecticut Whale in a low-scoring game in Stamford. The Connecticut Whale improved to 7-0 on the season, defeating the Buffalo Buttes in a shootout 3-2. The Buttes led early with a goal from Megan Duggan 51 seconds into the game. Then Shelley Bram scored at 6:30 of the second period to put the Buttes up 2-0. The Whale were able to get one back before the end of the second when Sam Faber scored midway through the period with 25 seconds left in the third period. Kaylee Fracken would score to tie the game up for the Whale. All 3 Whale shooters scored in the shootout to win the game. And then also later that day, the New York Riveters faced off against the Boston Pride. The first 2.5 periods featured tight net minding from both Jenny Scrivens, who faced 37 shots in the loss, and Brittany Ott, who had struggled against the Riveters in the team's last 2 meetings. In the final 10.5 minutes of play, the floodgates would open when Jillian Dempsey scored and a pass from Blake Bolden. Hillary Knight would score 2 empty net goals, and Amanda Pelkey would also score for the Pride. Megan Fartleman would have the lone Riveters goal in the Pride's 4-1 victory. And then on December 8th, the NWHL has named Boston Pride forward Jillian Dempsey the Player of the Week. Dempsey had goals in each of Boston's victories this weekend, including 2 in the first 4:52 of Saturday's 7-6 win over Buffalo. She also broke open a scoreless tie in the third period of Sunday's 4-1 win over the New York Riveters. And without further ado, I bring to you the NWHL Player of the Week from the Boston Pride forward, Jillian Dempsey. Jillian, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you were coming off of a 3-game losing streak going into this weekend. What was it like to end that little losing streak and get yourself on a 2-game winning streak?
Well, I think for us, it was pretty frustrating to be losing that many games in a row. And, you know, it really kind of dampens the morale, and it was very important for us to turn that around, especially heading into this little holiday break. So it was amazing to have those 2 home games and be able to get the 2 wins and get ourselves back on a roll. I think that we really were able to improve on some of the things that we've been focusing on in practice, and it helped, you know, we played more a little bit like a team and were able to hold on in some tight situations and get those wins that we needed.
Now, of course, you started off the season 3-0, and then you went to the Four Nations break. What impact do you think that Four Nations break played into that 3-game losing streak?
Honestly, I thought we were just going to continue what we had started off the year with. I think maybe the break could have just thrown us off a little bit because we had some players gone and some players still back home practicing. And I think those teams, you have to give credit to the teams who beat us because they fought hard and they made the few opportunities that they were getting, they made them count. And by striking early and most of those games that we ended up losing, that put us in a hole pretty early on. And it's always tougher to fight back when you're starting the game in the first 5 minutes down a goal. So I think the break threw us off a little bit from that rhythm, and you know, it took a couple of losses to really get us to bear down and tighten up on the little things and work harder to get back on our win streak.
Now, right now, yourself and the rest of your team, the Boston Pride, are up in Minnesota right now, getting ready to face off against the Minnesota Whitecaps in an exhibition series. What is the focus for you and the Pride going into this exhibition series with the Whitecaps?
Well, we're excited because these are going to be incredibly competitive games. And, you know, I think Minnesota's proud to be hosting the games, and we're just glad to be here and to have another competitive weekend of hockey. Our focus has been for the past month just really honing in on the small details and making the simple plays. and everybody doing their job. And we're just going to try to continue focusing on those little details, because ultimately winning small battles and keeping it simple is what's going to win these kinds of hockey games, and really trying to bury our opportunities. You know, there's some games when we're getting 40 plus shots, and you know, we need more of those to start going in, get more traffic in front of the net, more quality shots, burying rebounds. So I think we're just going to try to continue really tightening those details and making every shift count.
And what do you think this exhibition series with the Whitecaps means to the NWHL?
Well, it's exciting to just be branching out of league play with there being only four teams in the NWHL. And I'm pretty sure Minnesota would want to be interested in joining the league. Who wouldn't? And they have the players and the talent to definitely compete at the high level of the NWHL. So I think it's going to be a cool experience to kind of branch off and see potential of whether this is something that, you know, in years to come, maybe Minnesota will become part of the league. So for the NWHL, it's great to get the exposure out here in the Midwest and, you know, maybe try to build that fan base out here too and get more people involved, especially the state where, what do they say, the great state of hockey?
They're the state. Minnesota is the state of hockey.
Yeah, so what better place to be to try to promote the game even further than in Minnesota? We have some homegrown Minnesotans on our team too, so hopefully it can create some more buzz about the NWHL and invest more people into watching and becoming fans.
Now, obviously, the next day after you were named Player of the Week, the NWHL announced that Dunkin' Donuts is the first official corporate sponsor of the National Women's Hockey League. This is a multi-year deal that was announced. Dunkin' Donuts is now the official coffee and quick service restaurant of the NWHL. And through the partnership, Dunkin' Donuts will coordinate youth hockey clinics with team representatives in each market throughout the season. What do you think that means for not just the teams, but for the league as a whole?
Well, it's incredible. I had no idea that was even in the making. So when it kind of came out on Twitter and everybody started talking about it, it was just amazing to be like, Dunkin' Donuts is sponsoring our league. You know, there's what they say, America runs on Dunkin', and all over Boston and Massachusetts, there's pretty much a Dunkin' Donuts on every corner. And you constantly see people holding their Dunkin' Donuts cups. And I think they're very deeply involved with the Red Sox and the Patriots and maybe the Bruins. I'm not 100% sure.
I know they listed in the presser that I got, like, they listed all the teams, like the Washington Capitals, which is down where I'm at.
Oh, I did not.
They definitely do it with the Washington Capitals down here. There's several teams, not just, you know, NHL. It's also NBA and Major League Baseball, like you mentioned, with the Red Sox and the Patriots. Yeah. And of course, the Dunkin' Donuts logo will be featured on all team jerseys, signage on the league goalposts, and behind each bench, and advertising on the website and for each team website. Now, I'm a little nitpicker. I'm not a big fan of advertising on jerseys, but when I saw the patch and it was this little tiny thing, I was like, okay, I can handle the little,
yeah,
the little tiny patch. I can't go with Europe style of advertising on jerseys.
Oh yeah, that's too much. But and then, yeah, it's pretty incredible though, because like now we're getting grouped in with all of these high level sports teams, and you know, for the league to be grouped in with the end of NHL and NBA and the NFL, it's amazing, and it's a great first step for us to like be involved with all of these professional men leagues and hopefully creating some opportunity there.
Now, of course, yesterday, moving on, because we have time restraints, unfortunately. Yeah. Yesterday was the NWHL All-Star Draft, where Hillary Knight and Emily Falzer selected their teams for the All-Star game.
Yep.
For Team Knight, she selected Casey Bellamy, Kelly Stack, Kaylee Fratkin, Janine Weber, Jamie Leonoff, Alyssa Gagliardi, Jordan Smelker, Brianne McLaughlin, Shelby Bram, Amanda Pelkey, and Jordan Brickner. And Team Falzer selected Brianna Decker, Megan Duggan, Kelly Stedman, Nana Fujimoto, Megan Bozek, Gigi Marvin, Blake Bolden, Brittany Ott, Cheyenne D'Arcangelo, Emmy Field, and Zoe Hickel. That's a mouthful and a lot of Boston Pride players at the same time.
Yep.
Seeing that half the All-Star roster is Boston Pride players, what does that make you think going into the fan voting that is currently ongoing, that started yesterday, Friday, December 11th, and is going until Monday, December 14th? What do you think about that? How does that hurt your chances, being how your team has the most players already in the All-Star game?
Well, I mean, it's so exciting that there's an NWHL All-Star game happening. I think people are, you know, really involved, and it's cool to see that that's going to be happening. And I had no idea that there even was fan voting. So to be in that mix is, you know, I'm pretty humbling. I'm just to be mentioned with some of the names, and it's great to see what I think it was 11 Pride players. And like, we have a very talented, skilled team, and I'm proud of all those players having the opportunity to be in, and I would love to be able to join them because it sounds like such a great experience, and it'd be so much fun. But we'll just have to see. I don't know. Maybe you can work on some votes for me down in DC.
Now keep this in mind. You have from yesterday, Friday the 11th to Monday the 14th, the vote via social media. For the players that you want, there are 4 roster spots completely open, 2 on each team. You have players like yourself, Jillian. You have players like Haley Williams, Jessica Kuzumi, who scored the first NWHL goal in history of the league, Devin Skeets, Kelly Babstock, Madison Packer, and many others to choose from. So it's a pretty competitive field just right alone. Just with some of the players that I named. So, because Devin Skeets, second player to get a hat trick in the league history, first in Buffalo Buttes. You know, again, Jessica Kuzumi, the first goal in league history. So you got some heavy competition. So,
oh, I know. Yeah, some great players in that mix, and good friends with a lot of them. Jessica Kuzumi, played with her for a couple of years, and she's a real incredible player, and she goes so hard. And so it was kind of amazing to see her get that first historic goal because she's been through so much in trying to develop and get women's hockey to this point.
Now, moving on, there were 2 player safety hearings yesterday as well. One was for Molly Engstrom of the Connecticut Whale, who was suspended for 1 game for delivering an illegal check. Actually, let's not even call it a check. It was a left hook to the head of Buffalo Buttes forward Megan Duggan. Molly ended up getting a 1-game suspension. And I'm just going to say, I mean, I watched the video. You probably saw the video as well. It looked like it was just a play that was breaking down and then targeting, and words were said, and a bad physical reaction came from Molly on this play.
Yeah, they sent out the clip. It was a little bit startling to see that it was just a straight up punch to the face, but you know, I think that the disciplinary committee, it's good to see that they're cracking down and they're going to be looking at plays that are dangerous or plays that involve some sort of fighting, because obviously we don't want it to get out of hand like that play seemed to have gotten out of hand. I don't really know what went on there and I wasn't at that game, but based on the clip that they showed, it was pretty unfortunate.
Now, moving on to the game that you were a part of, the other player safety hearing that was held was for the hit that your teammate Zoe Hickel put on Taylor Holes of the New York Riveters that occurred near the benches. Now, unfortunately, Holes was injured on the play as she was hit into an open door as a result of a line change that was going on at your team's bench. Now, after the hearing, it was ruled that no further action would be taken on Hickel. It didn't look like she was doing anything with malicious intent. It was just like she was taking the man. Or woman. But I felt that maybe she should have let up just a little bit, being how you're near the benches, there's a line change, you don't really try to nail the person into the boards when there's a line change going on. As a result, there was a new rule change that is going into effect effectively this Sunday. And the new rule states that all bench doors must remain closed during game action. The exceptions to this rule include the following, and violations will result in a bench minor penalty. The exceptions are, 1, if an injured player is in the process of leaving the ice, 2, if a goaltender is in the process of being pulled, and 3, between whistles and in between periods. Now, I'm going to say a little piece. I'm going to let you say your piece as well. I have a little nitpick with this, that this will potentially cause more too many players on the ice calls. To expect players to jump over the boards after a shift into the bench, especially after, like, say, a long shift on a penalty kill or something, I see the players, like yourself, not being able to do that all game long. And just to throw this out there, as an ice hockey player myself, I'm 5'11", and I can barely jump over the boards to get into the bench after a shift. So I want to put that in perspective right there. You know, I can barely do it. How are the league going to expect everyone else to be able to do this on a consistent basis every game and all game long? And I'm going to let you take away to kind of give your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I've been playing hockey for about 20 years now. And
a play like that
I haven't really seen that, you know, there might have been one other where it's just kind of an unfortunate circumstance. There was definitely no malintent, and sometimes when you're going hard, you don't even realize that the door is open. You know, you're focusing on your player. So I think it was just a kind of unlucky situation. And you know, my mind right away after the rule change went to the same thing. Now there's going to be a lot of confusion trying to jump onto the bench, and it's just crowded and the benches are already pretty full. So you know, it seems like based off of that one play, of course, it was unfortunate to see that the player who received the hit got hurt. But I think it was more of a freak accident versus something that happens frequently. So,
And I was just about to say, was what happened a fluke? Yes. Yeah,
I think
But how often do we see this? It's not as often as people think. You may see this once a season, once every 2 seasons. And like I said, I definitely think Hickel should have let up a bit, especially knowing that a line change was in the process, knowing where she is on the ice. Just to let up a little bit, not saying you have to let the player get by you, but not put him into the bench area. But only time will tell on how this rides out over these next couple of games. I had to let a little bit on player hearings, but due to time restraints, I'm going to actually start going into our wrap-up.
Okay.
So, which is, we're going to go into the standings real quick. We got Connecticut Whale in first place at 7-0-0 with 14 points, followed by Boston with 5-3-0 record with 10 points. The Riveters are in third with a 2-5-0 record with 4 points. And the Buffalo Buttes in last place with a 1-3-2 record with 4 points. On tap this Sunday, December 13th, you have the Connecticut Whale at the New York Riveters at 6:30 p.m. And of course, this weekend you have the Boston Pride playing the Minnesota Whitecaps in a exhibition series. And the New York Riveters will then be traveling after the game against the Connecticut Whale to Japan for an exhibition series as well. And then, of course, always, for more information on the NWHL, visit nwhl.co or follow them on Twitter at @NWHL_. And keep in mind, you have from yesterday, Friday, December 11th to Monday, December 14th to vote on your favorite players to get into the All-Star game that have not already been selected. And with that, I would like to say to Jillian, thank you so much for coming on the Experience Hockey Talk.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
And with that, we're going to go to break. Ladies and gentlemen, that next big convention is right around the corner, which is AwesomeCon. AwesomeCon, which is June 3rd through 5th, 2016, at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. Come see special guests like Adam West, Burt Ward, Marina Baccarin, and many others. For more information, please visit awesome-con.com today. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey Fan. And we are now jumping into the Washington Capitals game against the Florida Panthers on December 10th. The lineup for the Capitals had Alex Ovechkin with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie, Marcus Johansson with Evgeny Kuznetsov and Justin Williams, Jason Chimera with Jay Beagle and Tom Wilson, Brooks Like with Michael Latta and Chris Brown, who is making his NHL season debut for the season. Nate Schmidt and John Carlson were the first defensive pairing, with Carl Alzner and Matt Niskanen as the second pairing, and Dmitry Orlov with Taylor Chorney as the third pairing, with Philip Grubauer as the starter in net. In the first period, Florida got a goal 51 seconds into the game when Jaromir Jagr scored his 9th goal of the season from Dmitry Kulikov and Jonathan Huberdeau. Kulikov's 4th assist of the season and Huberdeau's 13th assist of the season. And then at 6:24, Jussi Jokinen got called for tripping. Then at 8:31, Justin Williams was called for slashing. Then at 13:29, Brandon Peary was called for elbowing. And then at 13:33, Nicholas Backstrom was called for holding the stick. At the end of the first period, Florida led 1-0. Shots were 9-6 in favor of Florida. Faceoffs were 11-6 for Washington. Hits were 11-5 for Washington. And both teams were 0-2 on the power play. This was not the best start for the Caps. You can tell the Panthers had more jump in their game. The Caps need to forecheck and create chaos in front of the Panthers' net going into the second period. And in the second period at 1:28 into the period, Carl Alsner was called for holding. Then at 7:24, Alex Ovechkin was called for high sticking. On that penalty, the Florida Panthers were able to score on the power play at 9:16 when Brandon Peary scored his 6th of the season, assisted by Brian Campbell with his 9th and Vincent Trocheck with his 9th of the season as well. Then at 12:46, Dmitry Kulikov was called for hooking, and then at 17:50, Dmitry Kulikov was called for delay of game. Florida then was, at the end of the second, Florida was up 2-0, outshooting the Caps 19-5. Faceoffs were 23-21 in favor of Washington, and the hits were 23-8 in favor of Washington as well. On the power play, the Caps were 0-4, where the Panthers were 1-4. This was another not-so-great period for the Caps, starting the period off with a couple of penalties, which then leads to the Panthers' goal. However, shortly after the 10-minute mark of the period, you could see the Caps turning it around, but when power play opportunities were presented, the Caps did not capitalize. The Panthers are playing their game, and as a result, are winning this game going into the third period. And going into the third, 5:43 into the third period, Tom Wilson received a 5-minute major for boarding and a game misconduct. Then at 6:30, Dmitry Kulikov was called for tripping. Then on 4-on-4 play, I believe, Aaron Ekblad scored his 6th goal of the season from Jonathan Huberdeau with his 14th assist and Willie Mitchell his 5th assist. Then Florida was called for slashing when Vincent Trocheck was called for the penalty at 15:04, and also at 15:04, Alex Ovechkin was called for cross-checking. At 15:35, goalie Al Montoya of the Florida Panthers was called for interference, and then Alex Ovechkin scored his 14th goal of the season, assisted by John Carlson with his 16th assist, and Nicholas Backstrom his 15th assist of the season. Then at 18:56, Logan Shaw scored an empty net goal, his 2nd of the season, from Jussi Jokinen, his 13th assist of the season. The Panthers would go on to win the game 4-1. The Panthers would outshoot the Capitals 26-20. Faceoffs were 33-28 in favor of Florida. Hits were 31-14 in favor of Washington. The power play was 0-5 for Washington and 1-6 for the Panthers. This was definitely a dud of a game for the Capitals. Florida did a great job mucking up the Caps game. One thing that killed the Caps were special teams. 0-5 on the power play is unacceptable. Also, the Caps need to stay out of the penalty box. With how many times they were shorthanded, it becomes difficult to create a flow and get momentum. There were just way too many penalties taken again in this game. And the Caps need to stay out of the box, because if they don't stay out of the box, then they're not able to play their game. Most credit off to the Florida Panthers. They started it off quickly with the Jaromir Jagr goal, and they just kept it consistent throughout. And with that, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we will do NHL news and notes.
Tilted Kilt Girl Brittany here. Need a place to watch the game? Come to the Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Tilted Kilt Frederick, home of the world-famous Tilted Kilt Girls, come to the best-looking sports pub you've ever seen for all your Washington Capitals games viewing pleasure. For more information on the Tilted Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey fans, and it is now time to do news and notes. And we are starting with Saturday, December 5th, when Shea Weber scored his first career hat-trick and the first ever by a Nashville Predators defenseman in Nashville's 5-4 overtime loss to the Detroit Red Wings. And also on December 5th, the Toronto Maple Leafs scored 4 unanswered goals, 2 by Nazem Kadri, to halt a 4-game skid in their head-to-head series with the St. Louis Blues. It was Toronto's first regulation win against the Blues since February 6, 2007, in St. Louis. Then on December 6th, the Chicago Blackhawks recalled forward Brian Bickle from Rockford of the AHL. A roster spot was created when forward Viktor Tikhonov was claimed off of waivers by the Arizona Coyotes. And also on December 6th, NHL's Department of Player Safety announced that Vancouver Canucks forward Brandon Prust has been fined $5,000 for spearing Boston Bruins forward Brad Marchand during their game in Vancouver on Saturday, December 5th. On December 6th, St. Louis Blues forward Steve Ott will be sidelined for 3 months following an injury sustained in the first period Saturday versus Toronto. Ott will undergo surgery on his hamstrings next week. And also on December 6th, with less than 2 minutes remaining in regulation and the Blackhawks ahead 2-1, Patrick Kane had an assist to establish a Blackhawks record with a point in 22 consecutive games. Kane set the record 44 years in one day after Bobby Hall began his run. On 12-7, the NHL Stars of the Week ending in 12-6, it was announced. First star was John Gibson, goalie of the Anaheim Ducks. Gibson posted a 3-1-0 record with an 0.76 goals against average and a .968 save percentage with two shutouts to lift the Ducks into fourth place in the Pacific Division. In second place, Shea Weber, defenseman of the Nashville Predators. Weber tied for second among all players with 3 goals, 3 assists, 6 points, including his first career hat trick to power the Predators to a 1-1-1 record in 3 contests. And third star was Mike Camilleri, left winger of the New Jersey Devils. Camilleri led the NHL 4 goals, 3 assists, 7 points in 4 games, including 3 straight multi-point performances to help the Devils move into the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. On 12-7 at the Board of Governors meeting, Arizona Coyotes co-owner and president Anthony LeBlanc announced that the team is actively researching plans for a new home in downtown Phoenix or in the city's East Valley. The Coyotes' lease with Gila River Arena in Glendale expires after the 2016-17 season. Also on December 7th, the Colorado Avalanche honored their 20th anniversary team as selected by the fans at Pepsi Center in the second half of their home-and-home series with the Minnesota Wild. The night included a special pregame ceremony as well as a memorable jersey offer backs presentation headlined by Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg, Patrick Waugh, Ray Bourque, and Rob Blake, among others. On 12-8, Montreal Canadiens forward Alexander Semin cleared waivers and was assigned to St. John's at the AHL. Semin, who signed a 1-year contract with the Canadiens over the summer after being bought out by the Carolina Hurricanes, has 1 goal and 4 points in 15 games. 12-8, also Pittsburgh Penguins forward Pascal Dupuy will no longer play hockey because of a medical condition related to blood clots, both Dupuy and the Penguins announced. Also on December 8th, the Florida Panthers reached a modified operating agreement with Broward County after its commission on Tuesday approved a deal that includes rewriting the lease at BB&T Center. After ahead 5-1 after 40 minutes, the Stars yielded 4 straight Hurricanes goals before Patrick Sharp scored the winner with 18.5 seconds remaining in regulation to lift the Dallas Stars to a 6-5 victory over Carolina. Also on December 8th, Patrick Kane scored into an empty net with 1:36 remaining in the third period to record his 600th career point, extend his point streak to 23 games, and lead the Blackhawks past the Predators in the first half of a home-and-home series. On 12-9, Alexander Semin was placed on unconditional waivers by the Montreal Canadiens with the purpose of mutually parting ways with the forward. Semin declined his assignment the day before to St. John's of the AHL after clearing waivers on Tuesday. On 12-10, the Columbus Blue Jackets goaltender Sergei Bobrovsky will be out for 3 weeks with a lower body injury. Bobrovsky left the game on Tuesday against the Los Angeles Kings with 5:35 remaining in the third period after making 33 saves on 34 shots. Also on 12-10, Vancouver Canucks defenseman Dan Hamhuis sustained a facial fracture when he was hit by a puck during a game Wednesday against the New York Rangers and will have surgery on Friday, 12-11, as of 12-10, there is no timeline for his return. And on 12-10, Chicago Blackhawks forward Patrick Kane scored a third period goal to extend his franchise record point streak to 24 games. And then on 12-11, Ottawa Senators defenseman Chris Phillips likely won't return this season because of problems he has been experiencing during his rehabilitation from offseason back surgery per general manager Brian Murray. Phillips, who is 37, hasn't played since February 5th of last season when he played in his 1,179th game with the Senators, breaking former captain Daniel Alfredson's record. And then also on 12-11, San Jose Sharks forward Logan Couture is out indefinitely after having surgery Thursday to repair a small arterial bleed in his right leg, General Manager Doug Wilson said in a statement released by the Sharks. At this time, there is no projected time frame for his return to the ice, but it is not expected to be a long-term recovery. Fortunately, this injury is completely unrelated to his previous ankle injury that kept Couture out of the lineup for 23 games. And finally, on December 11th, Patrick Kane extended his point streak to 25 games with a power play goal, 10:36 into the second period of a 2-0 win against the Winnipeg Jets at the United Center, tying Pittsburgh Penguins center Sidney Crosby's streak in 2010-11 as the longest since the 1992-93 season. And I completely forgot to write what is on tap for the Caps, so we take a quick look at their pocket schedule. Coming up next for the Washington Capitals, we have four games on tap. Today, December 12th, they play the Tampa Bay Lightning in Tampa Bay. Then on Monday, they play the Pittsburgh Penguins in Pittsburgh. Then on December 16th, they're at home against the Ottawa Senators and at home against the Tampa Bay Lightning on Friday, December 18th. Also, just throwing this out there for all those, going back to the NWHL report, you can keep on voting as of right now until this upcoming Monday. And if I were allowed to vote, and unfortunately I can't because I am press, my vote would go to Haley Williams of the Buffalo Buttes, who is the first person to ever be interviewed on this show in regards to the National Women's Hockey League. So I recommend my vote would be Haley Williams, but there are also many others that are deserving of the vote as well. You can follow me on Twitter at @experiencehockey and on Facebook at facebook.com/experiencehockeytalk. And as always, we have been brought to you by the Tilt a Kilt Frederick, the Tilt a Kilt Pub and Eatery, located at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Come to the Celtic-themed sports pub featuring the world-famous Tilt a Kilt girls. For more on Tilt a Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today. And until next time, we'll see you on the ice.